Welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast, where we share knowledge, philosophies, wisdom, and insight to help you on your journey in both sport and life. Introducing your host, Rob Riles.
Hello, and welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast. Welcome along. It's Rob Riles welcoming you as usual to another episode. Now, today I'm really excited to bring you somebody who it's an absolute pleasure to sit with. I'm actually sitting in his office. I'm sitting in his pretty new building. I'm surrounded by, and I tell you, I feel really at home. I'm surrounded by autographed photographs, framed shirts, a library of coaching materials, and it feels really at home. And I'm sitting with a gentleman called Martin Irvin. Now, for those of you who don't know, Martin is the owner of PCT Coaching. He is a coach developer at the English FA. Just as a little kind of touch and vision into his previous CV, he's been, and he'll correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, he's been a professional development phase coach at Witton Albion, a first team coach at Kidsgrove Athletic, youth development phase coach at Port Vale, at Walsall Football Club. He's also worked at Stoke City, Crewe Alexandra, Warrington Town, and I believe he was an engineer in the British Army as well. If there's anything we've missed out, I'm sure he'll put us right. But and if there's anything that's not correct, Martin, please correct me. But welcome along to Leader Manager Coach.
Thank you for joining us today. Thank you.
Martin Irvin. So, Martin, first of all, this is my first time at your venue. I want to go into your story a little bit, but just tell us about PCT Coaching, because we're sitting here in a lovely venue. We've just looked at the surface, your playing surface. We've talked about your coaching, you know, and we want to know more. I certainly want to know more about PCT Coaching because it's something I think, you know, we need to share. So fire away, bud.
Thank you. PCT Coaching was sort of born out of quite randomness, to be honest with you. So whilst I was working at Crewe Ladies, I was asked if I did any positional stuff individually. And at the time, the answer was no, I wasn't. And then, you know, there was a bit of demand for that. And from that, I sort of started to do little one-to-one stuff, position-specific practices. And then the brainchild actually came from when I was working for a sports coaching company. And we were asked to do a community hour as part of our contract, which would be free. You know, we would give back to the community. And at that session, I was given some money by the coach. And I thought that was for the session. It was only when I went into the office the next day they said, have you got that money? So I asked the question then, you know, where's that come from? You know, I thought what we did for free, they're like, no, that's what we charge for you having a B license and you doing your coaching. And I thought, well, I'd rather work for myself than somebody else. So that's where it sort of started. That was back in 2019, 2020. And we started off like, you know, most do at a local park because it was free. And, you know, I can remember the first month or so I'd offered out like 9 till 12 and nobody arrived, nobody turned up, nobody booked in and about to probably jack it in, if I'm honest. And then the following week I had 9 till 10 and then the week after it became 9 till 11 and then it became within the space of a month 9 till 3 and demand just started to keep creeping up. Obviously, with being outside, you've got the weather. And I always had this dream of having an indoor facility where we could do what we were doing, the positional stuff and the personal technique stuff, to be indoors. So you're never getting a session cancelled. And I think we alluded to prior to recording this, I was in a job that I probably didn't like, in a sales job, and decided to make a break for it and take PCT serious. And a week later, we went into the lockdown due to coronavirus. And, you know, that was quite a worrying time with no income coming in. But like with everything, you get through it. But what we've got here now is, and again, we said this off air, was a 6 years worth of graft and frustration and disappointment and failure, but lots of learning, lots of lessons. And, you know, hopefully now we've got something that I know we're proud of it. I'm certainly proud of it. And hopefully the local area and the people that come and, you know, trust us with their development are proud of it as well.
Yeah, yeah. So this particular venue that we're in now, Martin, you said to me that this is not where you've always been. So this is new. How new is it in terms of for PCT?
So in terms of our doors opening, we've been in here 3 weeks. I think it's our third week.
It's brand new, isn't it?
So yeah, yeah. When you come in now, you can still smell the grass. That's how new the venue is, and you know, like just the newness of some of the paint that still lingers in the air, and the banners that are freshly printed. But we were at a previous venue. It was upstairs. Did I think that we were going to last 2 years in a venue upstairs playing football 3-4 hours a night? No. And even that was a jump. So, you know, looking at the rent and the expenditures and the overheads there, you're thinking, is this going to work? You know, again, we were having 2 hours a night, and, you know, as you know, being a coach, we always fill our schedule with other jobs and other roles. And then it started to build to a position where a decision had to be made. Do we continue to follow these roles in academies or, you know, with non-league clubs, or do we just settle down and drive forward PCT? Which, you know, at the time it was a very brave decision to do that, and thankfully, you know, it's paid off dividends, because we're just incredibly busy at the minute.
It's great. So can I just touch on that and bring that point out about that decision? Because one of the things I'm passionate about, one of the things that I know the listeners to the podcast are passionate about, and I think probably you are as well, is that courage, that bravery, that decision. Because we all know in life, people who listen, talk's cheap, isn't it? We can all talk about doing this, doing that, doing the other, but actually doing it is a completely different thing. So just can I ask you to open up a little bit about that decision? Where, and was there a time when you had sleepless nights? Was it something that you did easily because of the situation? Were you forced into it, if that's the right word? And was it something that you doubted would ever be worth it? And just share that a little bit.
I think if I go right back to when we took the initial lease out on the first building, that was, like you say, talk is cheap. We were telling people we want our own facility, we want this. And then, you know, it was through a good friend of mine, Wayne, who turned around and said, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? You know, the lease that you've got is 2 years. The worst that can happen is that you'll be out of pocket this amount if it doesn't work, you know, and you have to pay up to the end of the lease. And, you know, you look at it and think, all right, that could be affordable. But then I think going back to what we mentioned before, it's being happy. You can be in a job and not be happy. And, you know, at the time, and I'm going off on a tangent here, going back further, my first ever job was at Macclesfield Town, before obviously Rob Smethurst come in, and the club wasn't in the best of places financially, and you know, it was a dream job for me. I was youth engagement officer, helped building the fan base and grow the community, and then, you know, I was tasked by the chairman, funnily enough, a month before what the season would start, to go and form an under-18s team, which was like, brilliant, yeah, we'll get the pull. I asked what funding I got, and he said none. So trying to set up a team without any funding was difficult, but there was some wonderful people in and around the club who kindly supported us in terms of sponsorship and getting kits. And the under-18s were formed, and that was all within sort of the first month of being there. In fact, my first weekend of work at Macclesfield was in the FA Trophy final, you know, and what a wonderful opportunity that was to go to Wembley and see the team there and be around the club at a time of good positivity. And, you know, the job that John Askey had done, not just then, but the season after, was superb. But it sort of hid away the stuff away from the club. And, you know, the first month was fine. We got paid on time. And then after that, we weren't paid on time. And, you know, you're starting to think, where's my wage coming from? And I'll be open and honest, the stress of it was incredible. I can remember some days I didn't have any money to fill.
And trying to explain to your wife why you haven't got any money in there.
Well, I didn't. this was the thing. I didn't explain anything to her. I didn't tell her. You know, some days I was having to, when I knew I didn't have to go and about in the community and I was at the stadium all day, I would drive halfway, three quarters of the way there to save on fuel and walk the rest. And that's the thing that people don't see.
Seriously?
Just to save on fuel, because I didn't have money in the bank to go and pay for it, because we weren't paid on time at certain times. And I think it all came to a head, really, where this sounds daft and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I had to wash the kit myself. So on a Sunday, I'd look to go in and pre-soak the kit if we were playing, because we were playing at Mary Denby playing fields, which was, no disrespect to it, no better than a farmer's field as such. Mm. You know, we were wearing white shorts, oh, yeah, unfortunately. And then, you know, all of a sudden I was told I can't use the washing facilities on a Sunday or a Monday because of the first team. And so then you're thinking, oh, you're taking the kit home and washing it, and then your wife's going, why are you bringing this home?
Okay, yeah.
And then just things started to just transpire in the club, and, you know, we weren't allowed to be in certain areas of the ground at the same time as the first team. And I always remember we used to bring in a team of the week. So it'd be a team that would come in, meet the players. As they arrived, they're going into Rory's Den, they meet the mascot. You know, Rory's Den again was something that we put up for the fans,
yeah,
with no funding. And I have to give a shout out to Jace at Spiral, because he kitted the whole place out for nothing. And it must have cost him a fortune, to be fair. And then one week, you know, we were getting the players to chant names of the players that were coming in. And next thing you know, the players didn't come over and sign the autographs. And then you're asking. So I asked the players, you know, why are you coming over? They were then told by the gaffer not to come speak to us pre-game, which then affects your job. And you're thinking, I'm supposed to do a job with these restrictions. And, you know, it comes to a point where I was defaulting on my mortgage. My wife was 6 months pregnant at the time. How do you tell your wife that as a man and a husband, you're not bringing
money?
That was hard. And it got to a point where I said to her, look, I'm going to have to come away. She'd ask why. And I told her why. And then, fortunately, again, a friend got me a gig at Warrington Town with their education program, which was a lifesaver. And what a job that was, by the way. I was very fortunate to work with about 32 players every day. And, you know, with the German and Chryso team, which was split into first and second years, because it was 16 to 18 program. And, you know, we trained at Warrington Town. I had a wonderful relationship with the chairman, who supported us in everything we did, and the contrast was completely different. We actually went on and had a very successful season that year. And then the decision came a week before our grand final that they were no longer going to stick with the NPLFA at the time, not the Premier League Football Academy, and they were going to bring in Robbie Fowler's Academy. And let's be honest, at the time, even now, you know, if you were to ask anyone who I am, wouldn't have a clue. But if you ask who Robbie Fowler is, you're going to have that pull. So a week before the grand final, after having won the league and not been beaten, I was out of a job. we went on football to win the grand final in what was the most wonderful game. We were 2-1 down with 5 minutes to go. We scored a wonderful goal, which I think has gone out online. I think it was from the keeper to the goal was 9 passes. The opposition didn't touch the ball. And then last minute, we win a free kick on the halfway line and he's going straight to penalties, and you're thinking, one last throw of the dice. And fortunately, we got a knockdown and won it in the very last minute, the kick of the game. And then you go from being really, really, you know, ecstatic and happy, and then all of a sudden you're out of a job. And that's the harsh reality of football, I think, is you can experience those wonderful highs, but then in the next breath, you're on low again. And I'm wondering, just pass my B licence. When am I going to get a job now? I've not got any experience. And again, I was fortunate enough then to step into a coaching role with Port Vale in the academy, which is obviously where we met. And then also at ASM Sports, which was delivering a PE provision, Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2. And yeah, I'll be honest, and I said this to Alex, the guy who runs it at the time, he pretty much saved my life at that time, because going back even further through the stresses of Mac and everything else, I grew up in the army. I joined the army at 16, and you know, you're in a situation where you know what you're doing, where you're doing it, what kit you've got to wear.
Very
structured. And then you come out into this weird and wonderful world of civilian street, and it's a mess.
Did you remember, if you look back, and I'm kind of alluding to the fact that I've heard this before, how difficult it is to realign yourself when you've had discipline, structure, demands, excellence, if I can use those words, and then you come out and it's like
chaos.
Chaotic. I was going to use the word chaotic, not to be disrespectful, but in terms of comparison,
yeah.
It's like, oh my days, this is such a difficult environment to work with, and there's no respect like there is in the army, and there's no the rules of engagement are different.
100%. You go from, like, I joined a month after leaving high school, so you go in at 16 and everything's, like you say, very regimented. You got to be here at this time, wear this kit, everything's laid out in your lockers, you know, ironed, pressed, you've got your beds made, and then, you know, you're talking about, then you go into training and everything. So you speak about excellence, and it is, and I think this can be alluded to football as well as the army. You always drop down to the level of your training, and I think that's why the British Army is known as the best in the world, because of the level of training. So you then come out, and, you know, so just to talk you through the process, I was out in Afghanistan, and they were doing the next round of redundancies. Bear in mind, I've been married less than 6 weeks before I deployed. I was one of the first ones that went out on what was called a pre-advance party, and I can remember sitting there thinking, well, back here again.
Yeah.
You know, what's the career plan? I've just been married. And then you always have those little thoughts. The people that were, you know, being killed at the time were always freshly married or just had a baby or expecting to be married, and you're thinking, oh, this is my third one, this is the third time away, am I going to be that number? And then halfway through they were announcing, obviously, redundancies, and you could apply. So I thought, you know what, I'm 27, you know, I could get.
So you did 11 years.
I could start again. By the time I got out, I'd done 12. So I thought, this was in, it's around October, November time of 2012. And I thought, do you know what, let's apply, let's see what goes on. And we returned home on April the 6th. We had a month's leave. I went back in, and then on the 17th of June was told that, you know, my application for redundancy was done. And the regiment I was serving with at the time, they were amalgamating. So they were forming with another unit. So the Queen's Royal Lancers were forming with, I think, the 16th, 5th Lancers, or the 9th, 12th Lancers. I can't remember at the minute, but they were forming. So anybody who was made redundant or taken redundancy were to not be there. So I remember going back to the workshop office, and my sergeant turned around and said, "What are you doing?" So I'm in work. He says, "You've just got redundancy, mate. Go home." So from our last official day was the 17th of December. From the 17th of June, I was on paid leave, effectively. And, you know, you get used to having that time. As I say, my wife was pregnant with our first child at the time. You know, and you get used to it. And then all of a sudden you have to go through job interviews. Nobody had told me for the last 12 years how to sit an interview. Nobody had told me how to do a CV, a cover letter. I'd say I ended up getting a job at QuickFit, and working in a service centre, and we go back to excellence, and the excellence that you see in the army of structure, and you get certain ways of processes, and everything's in certain areas, and everything's accounted for. It just, and this isn't disrespectful to QuickFit, but I would say that going from that structure to something that was so almost flexible was hard. Because then you're trying to implement, and, you know, and I'll touch on this hopefully later on, but you're then speaking to people who haven't had that structure and those standards that you've been drove into and your ways of the world, and you're struggling.
And they're looking at you like, who are you and what are you on about?
I can always remember, like, I had a wonderful, wonderful group of men that worked with me on Headache 17, which was the last tour in Afghan. And, you know, if a job came and you'd say, right, lads, come on, let's get it done, let's crack on. And they'd do it. And then you'd pay them back and you'd be like, right, got a bit of downtime, go check your emails, go have a shower, go to the gym, because you never know when we might be working through again. And I always remember a disabled gentleman came in, and I was like, right, excellent customer service. And I asked the lad through the back, a young lad, can you check his tyres? You know, he's come for his health check. He went, I'm on my break. I went, no, I appreciate that, mate. I really do. Can you sort him out and then I'll double your break? He says, I'm not doing it. And I'm like, I'm not asking you now. As your manager, I'm telling you. He went, nah, mate, I'm going home. And he walked off and walked home. And I thought, how can that be right?
Yeah.
You know, we were there to provide a service you know, we weren't. So that frustrated me a lot. And obviously I was in a decent position in terms of rank in the army, and then like the way certain people talk to you at times, and I thought, oh, I don't like that. So I ended up leaving and working nights, again, to provide for the family. And I work in nights as a truck fitter, and just as I was coming in to go to bed, my daughter and my wife are getting up. They're having to walk around on eggshells because you're trying to sleep in.
The day.
Yeah. And listen, nights just didn't work with me. And then you go back. I ended up working as a service technician for a company called Staffs Fitness, working on gym equipment and repairing that. And that was brilliant. I absolutely loved the job, but again, some of the processes weren't what I would want, you know, in terms of like spare parts. And I'm like, you're sending me to a job in London and I'll come back, and then the next day you're sending me to Kent.
Like, I've got to stay
there. Surely with a bit of planning. Yeah, with a bit of planning. Here's your parts. Here's what's needed.
Do both jobs. Yeah.
You know, and that started to take its toll because, you know, through little bits, you weren't allowed to have the van at your home address overnight. So most times, like those two moments I spoke about London and Kent, I'm driving past my house to go and drop the van off to come back, which is then an extra hour on the journey. And then the next day you're up at 6.
Go and get it. Yeah.
And you just think, is this what I want? And, you know, I think I ended up going to Johnson Health Tech, and then ended up working there and ended up being a service centre manager, working with like sort of 8 engineers, and it was brilliant and the company were great, but my passion was always football.
Are you struggling to find that extra edge to help you stand out above the crowd? Separating yourself from the rest is often about personal leadership. Achieve your true potential and become who you really can be. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course is a unique membership accessing the knowledge and wisdom from history's greats that will help you develop both personally and professionally to make you truly stand out. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course. Access now at patreon.com Leader Manager Coach. So you'd got all this enormous amount of, which I didn't know about, enormous amount of life experience, Martin, which is so undervalued in life, so undervalued. So you've got all this, you know, you haven't just been in the army and done some basic training, you've given it 12 years, a decade plus of your life and worked your way up and kind of ingrained yourself in that and come out readjusted, you know, not sat there thinking, what shall I do? But you've got a family, you've got demands, you've got that, you've tried working at night, you know, you've gone back into an industry in terms of the fitness equipment and the mechanical side of the automobile industry, you know. So crikey, mate, you know, it demonstrates a willingness to engage with life and do what's necessary. And yet underneath it all, as you're getting to, you had this football thing going on, like a lot of people do.
Yeah.
So go on, how did that kind of...
So again, that was probably born out of frustration as well. You know, on a weekend I was playing at Staffs County level, you know, nothing spectacular, sort of step 6.
Yeah.
The football we played wasn't how I wanted it or how I wanted to be part of. You know, it was back to front very quickly. I played as a midfielder. Not very well, but you know,
as well as good, yeah.
I wanted to get on the ball, and I wanted to play and be involved in the game, and I ended up with neck ache. And I said to the gaffer one day, I said, this is awful, this is terrible football. Like, I want to play, I want to get on the ball. And he went, well, if you want to dictate how we play, go and get qualified. And we had a bit of a barney, I'll be honest. You know, we clashed, and I said to him, right, okay.
Well, yeah.
I will. And you know, here I am. What, 12 years later,
got your badges, yeah.
Drove into it and immersed myself fully because, you know, I think we all do as coaches, we have a certain way that we want to play, and that wasn't how I wanted it to be played.
So listen,
there's a time to play a longer ball, isn't there? But
so let's just go. So here you are, you've got your A license, yeah?
A license.
So you've been through your B license, your A license, and listen, they ain't no easy things to get. You've got your Advanced Youth Award as well.
That's correct, yeah.
Fantastic. So,
and Elite Youth License.
Well, didn't even know that. So, fantastic. So, listen, having been through that process myself, some of those processes
I'm under no illusions about how much time it takes, how much money it takes, and how much you invest in that. So, you know, blimey, Martin, you know, even taking away this PCT and the facility you've got here, what you've created in your life and together with a family, mate, you know, anybody who understands life will understand how much you've invested, and it is, it's commendable. So you've bought all this to PCT coaching, yeah? That's what you've bought. So, you know, you've talked a little bit about the decision when you started PCT coaching and all this. So,
yeah, I went off on a massive tangent there.
Yeah, you did, but I just want to make sure that, because I want your story, which is, you know, so we've got this lovely story of you 16 years of age, going into the army, immersing yourself in that. I mean, you know, even that on its own, life and death experiences, which people who don't go into the military don't have to do, coming out, adjusting, and there's so much in football about people leaving football and how stressful it is when you come out into a you're in a niche industry and then you come out. We're also aware of all the challenges that people who've been in the forces face when they have to come out into Civvy Street. And I'm looking, sitting opposite somebody who's been through that, and you've put all this stuff into your qualifications, and you've talked about your Walsall experience, you've talked about your Warrington experience, you've talked about your Port Vale experience, and how your kind of thought processes came to PCT coaching. Yeah, so what is it you want to achieve with your PCT coaching? What's your dream and your vision?
This sounds like really cheesy, and it's not me trying to hide from the fact, and we'll go into more detail, but I want to be happy. And at other clubs, and I know we spoke off air, is that I've not been happy. I would like to think, being probably from an engineering background, I've got quite a different type of brain in the way that I see things and want things to work, and, you know, I like being challenged and I like challenging others, and there was just things that were coming out and I didn't quite believe in, and I thought, you know, I'm being asked to train a player at a position that he's never played all his life,
yeah, yeah,
and in a formation that doesn't have his position, you know.
Right.
So, you know, and it was on the advanced youth award that came to fruition, because, you know, you're working on the psych side with Philippa McGregor. What a wonderful woman she is, by the way. Completely changed my way of thinking on the psych side. And, you know, this player's going through adolescence, and you're putting him from centre midway, he's played all his life, to right back. And the player breaks down in the session, and, you know, I apologise for the language, but this 12-year-old turned around and went, how the fuck am I supposed to play right back when we don't play right back in our formation? And it was at that moment I went, you've got a point. You've got 100% got a point. This isn't about the club, this is about you. Like, what are we doing to this young man? And, you know, obviously we had to try and play him at right centre back, and then, you know, as a right winger to incorporate the attacking side, yeah, of the game, and then, you know, we went into 11v11 at 13s onwards. And, you know, it's those conversations you have with the heads of sheds, and you're saying, what are we doing to these kids? You know, because ultimately they're all kids. Mm. And, you know, it's a case of just do as you're told. I've just done 12 years in the army being told what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I wanted to be that little bit expressive, and I think from what we're trying to do at PCT is, can we create the ultimate player, and what is the ultimate player? So for me, can we get a player that can twist and turn and move both ways, that they can change direction at speed, that they can manipulate the ball with both feet, play off both sides, not because they have to, but just because they can, because the game never really dictates that you're always going to use your favourite side. So can they be efficient to use both feet? Have they got a plethora of tools in terms of skill execution to escape and evade? Are they able to make good decisions? Because, you know, I think some of the world's best players are the best decision makers.
Yeah.
Can we get players making those decisions? You know, I've got a lad in at the minute who, you know, his club have told him he's not making the right decisions, you know, and I'm asking the question, are you being put in decision-making practices? And he's like, no. I'm like, how are we creating decision-makers if you're not putting them in that situation? So, you know, what we try and do is, and it's all personalised, we ask the players and the parents more so what they want. You know, we have older lads who play semi-pro and professional who just want to come in and get touches on the ball and refine that technique, and you'll find them coming in here passing against the wall for that excellence.
Yeah.
You know, and they, I look at some players and the drive to be better is unbelievable.
So you've got this enormous chunk of your philosophy that's creating technically excellent players, good ball manipulation skills, can be masters of the ball. You know, let's just take the ultimate example. You look at, you know, Maradona and say, do you know what, has there ever been anybody who's a better ball manipulator than him? You know, it's easy to talk about great players like that, but technical excellence is a thing for you. Yeah,
100%.
So part of your philosophy here is to enable players to develop those skills. Yeah,
I think like with what we do is we do a lot of repetition in terms of skill execution and practices, because you know we've got a little saying in here is that practice makes permanent. You know, and if you look at like the cognitive side of it and the central nervous system, the more that you repeat an action, you will get the myelin across the nerve endings and it becomes a stronger bond. The issue that these young players have is when they grow. Now that pathway will then be broken. And most people will go, oh, it looks like Bambi, or players will go, God, 2 weeks ago you were doing this. Well, he might have grown 2 inches, or she might be a little bit taller than they were last time. So we have to build that permanency in terms of what they do and their actions. And we've seen it here. We've seen players who are absolutely flying, and then all of a sudden they come in and their brain's heavy and their head's heavy, and it's forming those new connections in the brain at a bigger sort of height and physicality. So everything that we do is based around the player being able to twist and turn off both sides, execute skills, and, you know, ball mastery with both sides, and just be comfortable on the ball. You know, I think I'd probably pose this and hopefully invoke a bit of curiosity with the listeners is, who was the last England player that got you off the edge of your seat? You know, and fortunately there's a picture of him behind you, but I would say Paul Gascoigne.
Yeah.
You know, he is the last player that when he got on the ball, spectators and, you know, viewers got excited and like, oh, something magic's going to happen. Between Gascoigne and probably, you know, you look at Phil Foden now, and you know, we've got Bellingham who is causing a lot of excitement. We haven't really had that. And are we creating enough players that are brave enough to make decisions and risk failing? Because, you know, another word that we say in here is that failing's okay. If you fail in here, there's a reason why you're here, because you want to get better. And you will fail many, many, many times before you succeed. And I think it's that mindset that we try and put into the players is that, you know, if, you know, I think there was a stat, wasn't there, a crazy stat, something like these two instances. I think Lukaku had 11 shots once in a game and none hit the target. You know, so if, you know, little Cavu comes in here and misses the target on his first go, does it matter? Is it the end of the world? Well no, because you've got guys on hundreds of thousands of pounds a week who aren't. So, you know, as long as we're putting that permanency, as I keep saying, that repetition, that we've all heard of the 10,000 hour rule. I'm not saying that we have the players in for 10,000 hours, but if we can get them having that repetition, that constant reminder of executing skills and proficiency, then, you know, we're going to put them back into the clubs in a good state. And, you know, we're very fortunate that we've got a good relationship with the parents, who they get their reviews from their clubs now and go, this is the review, this is what the club want, can you get us there? And we go, absolutely, because we put the individual first.
So you've talked about decision making, you've talked about failure, and you've brought out some great points about that. You've only got to look at the stats for the greatest baseball player, that Babe Ruth, of, like, you know, I don't really understand baseball apart from the basics, but if you try and strike the ball and you miss it, you know, they call it a hit out, I think, or a strike or something, and it's like, he's got the most home runs, but he's also got the most times he's the player who's hit out, who's lost the most as well, who's failed the most. Michael Jordan, greatest basketball player, missed more free shots than most of other players because he's prepared to fail, you know.
Absolutely.
And that aligns quite well with, like, your story, doesn't it, really, with what you're saying about coming out of the army and then having to fail your way to get a job, almost, because you haven't got any clue about how to do the stuff, and then all the clubs you've been at, and create this with no money, and, you know,
the failure. The other thing, like you say, with that, and I will go back to, you know, I had a job interview for a role at a club I was with at the time, and you know, I thought I carried myself really well. I ticked all the boxes, and I didn't get the job. And it took, you know, 3 months before I got any feedback, even though I was seeing this person almost weekly. And it boiled down during an argument that, on the touchline, believe it or not, was that I didn't answer one of the questions correctly. So, you know, I asked for a reminder, and the question was, and this will always stick with me, it said, what experience have you got of managing people? And straight, I got excited at that point. I was, oh, brilliant. I've worked at QuickFit, service centre. I've been a service centre for engineers, for 12 engineers. I was in a war zone with 10
men.
Yeah,
I had to lead them, yeah.
And I thought, that's brilliant. And, you know, the guy at the time said, you didn't refer it to football. And I said, well, you didn't ask me that question. And that's the clarity of, you know, if you'd have said, what experience you've got managing people in football, I could have said, I've ran a grassroots team from one team to 34. We've won awards for being a great provider. I've dealt with nearly 700 parents on a daily basis. That would be managing people coaches. But again, I wasn't asked that question. And I felt, I think, again, we spoke off air, I felt really hard done by because it wasn't honest.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think you will get a lot of time honesty in the industry. And I go back even further, getting out of the army, you know, I thought I was going to walk into a job straight away because that's
your skill set.
Yeah, the life skills. You know, yeah. I've got a life experience that not many have. And then it's almost like people don't care.
So what?
So what?
No respect.
No, and you know, and then you think,
really?
How am I supposed to get a job?
Yeah.
You know, oh, you haven't been in the football industry? It's the old cliche, if you haven't got any experience. I'm like, yeah, because I was 12 years away in the army, I'm not going to have the experience and the knowledge. And I can remember going, again, going for a job at a non-league club, step five. They said, you know, there's no doubt you can coach, but what we worry about is, do you know any players? And I went, I'm going to let you in on a little secret here. I can make the players that you've got better. He's like, no, you need to.
Yeah, you need to know.
And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and you just, sometimes you're fighting with it. And that's why, you know, I'm probably quite opinionated and, you know, this stuff I believe in, and I believe that we should be getting young players technically excellent, and we should support the journey because it is a journey, and you know, it's getting younger and younger now. You're seeing like under five squads and under six squads, and you know, these guys are barely out of nappies and under trying to win games of football, and I do think it can be bonkers at times. So yes, I have an idea of how a team might want to play. However, I do think that what we do is make people better, and we will never ever promote and say we will get you this opportunity, we will get you that, but what we will promise is that you will get better technically, physically and psychologically. You will get better because of the experience that I have, and you know, the wonderful staff that I have around me have.
It's good. I mean, just on that, and we know that, I think if the industry had its way, they'd probably have kids who, before they could even walk, that's how desperate they are to get what they think is talent. And I've got my own, as you probably have, Martin, my own views on that. And as somebody who's been involved in physical development from kids through to adults, I think you can. I'm not saying it's wrong to get players involved with the ball, but the basic fundamental physical attributes of balance, movement, coordination, creating happy, confident, physically able kids, boys or girls, comes from, you know, you can give them a football and say, go and play football, but they need to trampoline, they need to climb a tree, they need to do wrestling, they need to play with the dads or the mums or with the mates, and not, you know, putting them in a team with a strip and a tracksuit and a club bag at age, you know, stupid ages. I'm not sure that's the answer, Martin.
And I think, again, with societal issues, and I'm sure this could be another episode, but, you know, you alluded to there, climbing trees, hedge hopping. You know, our old PE lessons used to be climbing frames, and you'd go up the benches, and they'd be, now because of health and safety and just societal issues, kids are not playing now. Like, we speak about awareness. I was having this conversation yesterday, but we speak about awareness in football. How did you used to build awareness when you were playing in the streets? It'd be caught, you know,
dog,
whatever, and you'd always then would be your natural surroundings. Like, we've just run a tech camp recently, and we finished off with a bit of Wembley, And the Wembley, kids absolutely,
I loved it. What's Wembley?
We played Wembley singles and Wembley doubles.
Yeah.
You know, and the way we used it, if you scored as a single, you went onto the other side and you had to communicate and find a partner. If you'd left the other side as a partner, you had to go and fight on your own. And, you know, that's what we used to do growing up, but because of societal issues and things aren't safe anymore, and you know, we've become very protective of the children, and rightly so. And I look at PE as well. You know, I don't want to go on down a rabbit hole here, but I look at some of the PE lessons that my daughter's having, and it's like throw a beanbag, clap once, catch. But are we getting them to hinge? Are we getting them to turn? Are we getting them to bend? Are we getting them to twist? The answer is no. Like, we have a little laugh in here sometimes now, as if, oh, if you miss this effort, you've got to do a forward roll. I'm like, what?
What's that?
And we'll say, do a roller-poly. They're like, what's a roller-poly? And you're like, really? Am I showing my age, or is that something that kids aren't doing anymore? They're not knowing how it is. And we have a really good laugh, like the parents and the coaches, that you're looking at these kids trying to do one, and then we have to show one as an example. And you think, why is that not being taught as a fundamental
movement? I know, absolutely.
Movement.
Absolutely. Fundamental movement. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think fundamental movement skills in kids at the minute are on the decline, because of social media, because of Xboxes, and we can always tell. Look, we can always tell when a player's been off school or been at home or had a day on the Xbox, because the brain is absolutely frazzled, and it doesn't work as much as we would like it to. And again, is that where society's going? Yeah. Everything's coming onto technology, and you as a coach have to adapt to that all the time. And I think ultimately you have to understand the player, the background, and what they do.
Yeah,
you know, I'll be honest, we've sent lads away from here where they've come in, and you know, when you're like, okay, what have you been up to? Like, I've had this day, and we've said, we're not coaching you. Not today, go home and rest.
Yeah.
You know, and the parents look at you sometimes like, you're like, what?
Well, yeah.
It's like, you're not paying us.
Yeah,
we're not taking for something that you're not having, but you need to go rest.
Yeah. It's not in your own interest. Yeah.
You've played five days honest. In a row. You're not having another session with us. No. Go home and rest.
There's not many places do that, Martin, would actually do that, because the money's too important.
It would be easy to take money. And again, we alluded to this offline, don't we? Money comes and goes. You know, you can always find a way to earn money. If you struggle for money, you go and get a delivery job. You go and do something. You go and earn money. Like we spoke to when I got out of the army. I really, really struggled when I first got out. But if you've got a family, if you've got kids, everything you do, I feel, is for them. You know, this sounds. I was with a therapist just before Christmas, and she said I had to get a hobby. Now, that's hard when football is your hobby, you know. And I can remember the conversation. What do you do when you're not at work? Watch football. Okay, what do you do when you go out? Go to a football game. What books do you read?
Coaching.
And she's like, you need something to switch off. So I have had a little hobby, and I've collected Premier League 23 stickers this year, and you know. And my wife's like, you put more stickers. But I don't go out, I don't drink. You know, and I think, what, buying 10 packs of stickers for £8 is nothing. But now my daughter's like, Dad, you've got loads of swaps. Can I get a sticker book? So then we're now going to sit down tonight after
great.
Work, and we're going to do stickers together. But that is my
yes.
hobby. You know, spending time with my kids. And I think, like anyone listening, all I would say, like, and this is probably a personal touch now, is that if you feel that you're struggling, just remember your why. Like I've come in here, and you know, you can see the size of the place and the work that's gone into it. And there's been times I'm coming in at 1 o'clock in the morning, and you're up at 7 with the kids, and then you're out all day doing it up again. And that has been the fact for the last 4 months. You know, when I get to Sunday, delivering module 3 of the C license, it will have been 4 months of working every single day. But then you think, why? My why is I've got 2 girls at home who absolutely love dancing, and you know, they're at dance 4 or 5 times a week,
yeah.
And that costs money, you know. And so everything I do is for them.
Brilliant.
And obviously the kids that we work with. But my why is, and I think I'm probably going off on a bit of a tangent.
No, it's okay.
So sorry if it sounds random, but you know, I've always sought to be appreciated. I think that's the thing. Like in the army, every year you had 2 reports. You had a report every 6 months. So you'd have your mid-year and then you'd have your final. And they were telling you, you're doing good at this, you're doing good at that. Can you do this to get better? When you come out in this big bad world, certainly in coaching, you don't really get told what you're doing right or what you're doing wrong. So there's always that constant self-doubt, that fear that,
I'm doing okay.
You know, and then, you know, you see that, like the people that you've seen, that people come in every week, you know, we get like 80 plus players in a week for private sessions. Mm. We've now grown to four coaches. We're bringing two coaches in. We've got a waiting list of 92 people. Mm. Even though you look at that, there's still that self-doubt of, how am I going to keep everybody happy? You know, when you're replying to messages at 7 in the morning, you're up at late at night planning stuff, and you think, why? Well, the why is, for me, as I mentioned, my kids, but what would I have wanted? You know, when I played between the ages of 11 and 15, I was told I wasn't good enough, but I was never told why.
Yeah.
And I never really had a chance to
put
them
things right, yeah.
So if I don't think we should ever tell somebody they're not good enough. I also firmly believe that every single person who wants to play football can get better. They can be taught. Mm. For me, I might be... I don't know. People might argue this, and I'm more than welcome to discuss it, but I think through practice, it makes permanent. And, you know, we say perfect. And it's a thing I always say to the players in here as well. The only thing that's perfect on this planet is your mother. You know, so it makes it permanent. And we make sure that the players know that it's okay to fail. It's okay to get it wrong, because the pressures that they're under are frightening.
So you get quite a few players who are at academies who come here for extra stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
And you get older players as well?
Yeah, so we get academy lads, we get grassroots guys who just want
to get better.
To move, yeah. We've had quite a few that just want to come and move. Get them off the PlayStations, and they have these sessions that are fun and active. And we're semi-pro lads. You know, we've just... we're really proud of John Beaumont and his Congleton team. They were literally seconds away from the FA final, yeah. You know, and then you look at their fixtures, and you know, and we speak, even now we speak to John about like resilience, and his first penalty for Congleton, he took it too early, so the ref made him retake it. So he's in that dilemma, where do I go now? And you know, I spoke to him, and he says, you know, I used positive self-talk imagery and just went to the same corner with power. And you know, he got it, and you see the outburst of emotion. We've just been really proud of our first international, Mia. She went and scored on a debut for England, Lionesses.
Brilliant.
And you know, I was very upset, very emotional, because when she scored, she come running over towards me.
Wow.
You know, and she'd asked me to go there, and I'm like, there's your mum and dad, go and celebrate with your mum and dad. But
she wanted to come to her coach,
she's seen
yeah.
the journey that we've been through, and do you know what, I'm devastated for her, because she was due to go to the under 17 Euros, and she ruptured her ACL the weekend before. And but we'll be there for her, and we'll support her, and we'll help her get back to fitness, and I have no doubt she'll go on and make a full international debut, no doubt.
Brilliant. So go on then, here's a chance for you. We could talk all day, mate. We could, and there's people who want to get to you, and I know you've got some coaching to get on with later. But why should people, and put you on the spot here, why should people come to PCT? Because I love it here. I've only been here for half an hour. I love the grass. I love the environment. I love the building. I love what you're doing in here. Your passion absolutely shines through. Why should people come to PCT?
Because we care. As I think I alluded to earlier, it would be very easy for us to go, yeah, take your money, let's go. You know, and there has been kids, like say.
Just so anybody knows, we have got some actual work going on in the building, so this is really authentic, so let's carry on and get this done, mate.
So, yeah, we've got... I lost my train of thought.
No, people care.
They care. You know, and I have lost sleepless nights when, you know, I'm thinking, why isn't this lad, you know, getting a connection, or he's not lifting the ball? You know, and I film stuff, and I'm like, right, what's his angles? And you know, and then suddenly they do it, and you're like, brilliant. And then you do lose sleepless nights over other people's kids, but you do it because we do care. You know, I know a lot of people say, but we really, really do. And you know, we've had players, like we've got Josh who coaches for us, he plays at Ulti, and we've got players who watch him play,
yeah,
because of that connection they have with him, and we treat them first and foremost as people.
Wow.
And children.
You know what, that in everything for me, Martin, says it all, because ultimately people just want to know that you care first and foremost, and then are you good at what you do? And I've got no doubt, I can see it, I can smell it, it's here, you care. And well, I know personally because of having worked with you and just your CV, mate, that you know, you don't work for the English FA if you don't know what you're doing, mate, and you don't develop other coaches, mate. So appreciate you know what you're doing as well, as so that is why people should come to PCT. So if you are geographically available in this area or the county or the UK, you know, so because why wouldn't you travel to get top class input, even if it's not that regular? We'll put on the show notes all your details,
appreciate
mate.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Listen, Martin, I'm going to let you get on with your day, and maybe we can follow this up. But
yes,
listen, mate, absolutely brilliant. Thanks for your time, pal, and catch you later.
Thanks for having me.
Top man.